And you think people are tuning out after 3 minutes because we aren't introducing ourselves fast enough? That's what you think? This is a podcast about the current cinema.
Yes. And that's what it is.
And you are Dave White.
That was just, I was being playful. Very playful.
Yes,
there.
That was such a jolly romp, whatever that was.
That was Sissy Spacek.
Not the actress.
That was the band.
Yes.
Or, well, not they're not a band, really. It's like a dude. Hang on, I think it's John Weeks, actually.
It's weird, because, you know, there's that joke in The Money Pit where Tom Hanks tells the band they can't change their name to Meryl Streep.
Yes, you
and
can.
And yet, here's a guy who's recording as Sissy Spacek.
You totally can.
So what does he know?
You can, in fact, change your band name to Meryl Streep.
Yes. Anyway, you are Dave White.
And that was Sissy Spacek. Mm-hmm. An untitled composition.
Yes, well.
And I thought, you know, this cassette has been sitting on the stack for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, I'm going to use it one of these days, you know.
Now I'll know I need to accidentally elbow it into the trash disposal.
Electronic noise.
You are Dave White,
our podcast.
Film critic for movies.com.
That's right. I am Dave White, film critic for movies.com. You are Alonzo Duralde, film critic of therap.com. And also of the award-winning What the Flick.
Except that we haven't won any awards.
You will. It's a matter of time.
On the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
Yes. And this is a podcast about movies. And here's what's great about this podcast about movies today. Number one, we have actual donuts in front of us, which we're not eating
during the show.
During
relax.
The show, we just finished eating them. I went to Santa Monica Donuts this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember, Santa Monica Donuts is what it used to be called, King Donut.
Okay.
But you and I used to call it Sad Donut.
Sadness Donuts, yes. And, I remember.
And then
they're cheerier now.
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's brighter and cleaner, and the donuts taste good now.
Okay.
As opposed to when it was Sadness Donuts.
Okay.
It's not cheerier at all.
Gotcha.
The lady behind the counter is clearly angry at having to get up early in the morning. I asked for 3 raspberry filled, and she said, "I have one."
Okay, then.
It's like,
I guess she was out late at Squirrel last night or something.
Yelling me,
not feeling it this
I'm
morning.
Patronizing your establishment,
in the donut world.
So I got one.
Okay, well, she had one.
It's mine, by the way. You're not touching it.
I have learned not to fight you for the Bismarck. Believe me.
The also here's another thing that's great about today's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It is pre-Oscars.
Yes.
Which means we continue to not have to talk about the Oscars.
Correct.
And then next Sunday, we'll be so far away from the Oscars
that everyone, nothing new to
everyone
add.
Who cares to talk about them will have already talked them to death, and we will not have to say a word. We've timed this perfectly.
I made you do a Monday morning Oscar recap special once, and you've never forgiven me for it.
No, because, yes, you're right. Yes, I have never forgiven you for it. And because it's stupid.
Okay. It is, pretty much.
Yes,
I agree.
That you made me do that.
Here's the thing. You think it's stupid, and I think it's stupid.
Yes.
But a lot of our audience is interested.
No,
they are.
Not.
They're
not.
They are. I'm
look,
sorry.
Listeners, if you care about this stuff, never tell us. Keep it to yourself. Some relationships are not meant to be fully honest all the time. You can just pretend
that you share this with us.
You share this with us. And if you're super into it, you can. You know what you can do? You can go to Alonzo Duralde's Twitter account today.
Tonight, yes.
Tonight. And you can follow him along as he live tweets.
I will
the Academy Awards.
I will be doing that
because
A Duralde, AD.
A Duralde does care a little more than I do.
You
care enough to live tweet.
I acknowledge it as an opportunity to get eyeballs.
I mean, you might you might see me post some things on Facebook about it. I mean, we are going to watch it.
Yeah, I'm willing to
pander. I'm willing to pander
because I every year...
Friends are coming over.
When I live tweet the Oscars, I get a lot of new followers out of it. Right. So, you know, it would be foolish of me to ignore
So them. You're mercenary
basically, about it. Yes. But I try to be funny, too.
I would like...
Okay, stop talking for 2 seconds.
To be more mercenary.
I just want to say my Twitter feed without you interrupting me.
Okay.
It's at A. Duraldi, A-D as in David, U-R-A-L-D as in David, E, A. Duraldi. That is my Twitter handle. Follow me on Twitter tonight. I will be live tweeting the Oscars.
A. Duraldi.
A. Duraldi.
Yeah, so, sure. I mean, we're watching them.
Yes.
I'm going to be here. Yes. People are coming over.
Right.
I'm making a big old bunch of pasta.
Yes.
And we're going to sit on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy... Quavonjene Wallace.
That's right. Would you like me to talk about going to the Independent Spirit Awards yesterday?
I would.
Which I attended.
Before we discuss this week's films.
Yes.
Why don't you tell me all about the Independent Spirit Awards of yesterday?
So I was on the Independent Spirit Awards nominating committee this year, which was very cool. I got, you know, we watch a whole bunch of indie movies and eventually sit in a hotel meeting room over a long weekend, and me and about a dozen other people of various disciplines, filmmakers, critics.
Shorey Agdashloo.
John Singleton.
Y'all were tight by the end of the weekend, you and Shorey Agdashloo.
We had some moments. She was pretty awesome. She was not there yesterday, unfortunately.
You always complimented her outfits, is why.
Well, you know.
Ladies love that.
I know how to talk to a lady. She was not there yesterday, unfortunately. I'm sure she's working, but anyway, love her. So we hashed it out and came up with these nominees, which is great. As Robert Abele, who was also on the committee, was saying, Robert, who's on our show,
who was a guest on the show 2 weeks ago, y'all didn't let me talk at all.
Boo hoo.
Yeah.
As he pointed out yesterday, the committee is basically it's an honor to be nominated committee, because the thing is the nomination committee sees all these movies and they pick these films and you know, you sometimes you'll see these little hidden gems that maybe haven't been released in the U.S. yet, but they played at, you know, Toronto or some festival, and they qualified for the Spirit Awards. And, you know, they've got incredible cinematography or this one great performance or whatever, and you nominate it. And then the mass of independent members vote on the awards.
Are you supposed to be talking about how you were on the nominating committee?
Yeah.
It's all right it's for public you to talk knowledge. About now.
Okay. Yeah. It's in the program book.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it.
But the thing is that, you know, then the Film Independent membership votes on it. And here's the thing. It's probably the same thing with the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see all the movies.
No, they don't. No, I mean, of course they don't.
I'm sure some of them do. I'm sure some of them take this very seriously and are thrilled to have the opportunity.
Ernie Borgnine did not want to watch Brokeback Mountain.
For instance.
And he didn't.
But, like, you know, if you're a Film Independent member, one of the perks you get, not only do you get to vote in the Spirit Awards, you get access to see these movies. Like, some years they've sent out screeners. I'm sure now probably they do something like where you can watch it on Vimeo or whatever. But you can, if you want to, watch every single Spirit Award-nominated movie before you vote. I don't think very many of them do.
Right.
The Spirit Awards are almost the easiest awards to handicap because it's almost always, in every category, the best-known movie wins. Case in point, big sweep for Silver Linings Playbook yesterday.
Yes.
Which won everything it was nominated for except Best Actor. Bradley Cooper will have to cry his perfect blue eyes into a silk handkerchief over losing to John Hawks
to John
for the
Hawks.
Sessions.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you know, it was like, you know, Matthew McConaughey won for Magic Mike. And, I mean, none of these people aren't deserving. I'm just saying, like, you can always point to whatever the most hyped, most seen movie in any category.
I'm just glad that Matthew McConaughey is being given positive reinforcements.
Yes. Well, he got two nominations this year. We nominated him as supporting actor for Magic Mike and also Best Actor for Killer Joe.
Oh, he got a nod for Killer Joe, mm-hmm. too. Perfect, because that movie's amazing.
And he's so great in it. And actually, the supporting actor category was interesting because none of the five guys that we picked got Oscar nominations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was McConaughey for Magic Mike, Bruce Willis for Moonrise Kingdom, Michael Peña for End of Watch, David Oyelowo for Middle of Nowhere, and... I forget. You can look it up.
I won't be doing that.
I don't mean you. I mean I mean the listeners. Anyway, but it was,
when you met Ernest Borgnine, didn't he say, "Call me Ernie"?
He didn't say it to me. He said it to everybody.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
But
I just wanted to make sure that I was getting that correct.
Yes, he was big about the Call Me Ernie.
That bit of goof.
Anyway, but the Spirit Awards, it's always a lot of fun. You know, it's under a tent at the beach at Santa Monica. It's very laid back. I mean, it's, you know, yes, it's still stars and their publicists and whatever, but it's less
gross
than a lot of other things. Yeah, people, I think it has been designed aggressively to be laid back, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
So, you know, people are chill. And you know, saw a bunch of, like, you know, people who've been on this show. Manolo Dargis was there. James Rocky was there.
Yes.
You know, just journos and indie film people. I saw the guys from How to Survive a Plague, which was nice. And, you know, yeah, it was fun. I had a good time.
Great. You brought home a gift bag.
I brought home a gift bag and a shirt from JCPenney's hip new Joe line.
Yeah, now you're part of the trending JCPenney cool guy.
Well, it's weird. I was wondering, why is JCPenney sponsoring the Independent Spirit Awards? And then driving home last night with Tom Ford, we go by across the street from Fred Siegel, which is this very, like, la-di-da Melrose boutique. Across the street on the corner, there used to be a Miss 60 store there, and then it went away, and now I just saw a big sign. It is about to become a Joe store. So JCPenney is obviously, like, trying to go upscale. They're trying to do the Missoni Target kind of thing, where they have, like, a line that is, you know...
That's their only hope.
I guess.
Because I read somewhere that they're just failing left and right.
Well,
right?
I mean, think about it. If you go to JCPenney because they're less expensive...
JCP.
If you're going there because it's less expensive, you know, you've got Walmart, you've got Target, you've got other options to go to.
Yeah.
And so the only thing they've got to bring to the table then is, like, something that you can only get there, or some brand that actually has some juice. Was JCPenney where La Tigre came from?
Maybe.
I think so. Wasn't that their attempt?
They should get that going again.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the band made it cool again. Kathleen Hanna for La Tigre.
For JCPenney. You should imagine, she would never do that in a million years.
No, probably not. But yeah, one of the highlights of the Spirit Awards, which I was just watching the TV cut of it, because they tape it in the afternoon and they air it at night. The guy who won Best First Screenplay for Safety Not Guaranteed, I think his name is Derek Connolly, got up and gave this speech that started out, you know, pretty normal, and then just started kind of rambling.
Yeah.
And rambling.
That's right.
And rambling. That's and how you finally do it. Like, basically, Bryan Cranston went up on stage and poured him a scotch.
You show up fully weeded.
This guy.
Then you tank up on the booze hall.
And this was the first. This was the first category of the show. Like, he, you know,
he was ready, like, to party.
Yeah,
right away.
Clearly. Yeah. And then about two categories later, we saw him get carried out of the tent by security guards. And, like, he could not stand up on his own. He was being physically sort of supported. It was crazy.
But you thought it was the Golden Globes.
Apparently so. Yes, he was looking to party with Christine Lottie in the ladies' room. Apparently. But apart from that, it went, I'd say, without incidents. But it was fun. That's like a lot of this stuff I sort of dread having to go to if I go to it at all. Like, you know, neither of us ever have to go to the Oscars, thank goodness. But the Spirit Awards are always fun, and I like the film independent people. I, you know, used to work
Gray's
there.
Going to the Oscars today.
I know, and so is Chrissy Lanier.
She's going to get kicked out.
She's not.
Watch. No, well, it's going to happen.
No, I asked Chrissy Lemire, you know, I said, okay, where do they put you guys? What happens? And so, okay, you know, there's what used to be the Kodak. It's now the Dolby Theater, you know, where they do the actual event.
Yes.
The press room is at the hotel at Hollywood and Highland.
Yeah.
So, as Christy put it, the winners have to walk by Hot Topic. Because they get taken out the back of the theater, through the Hollywood and Highland complex, and then over to the hotel room.
Is the complex open while this is
no,
going
no,
on?
No, no, no,
it's
no,
all
no,
shut
no.
down.
It's all shut down.
I see. So Beard Papa, you can't pop into Beard Papa.
Yeah, you can't go to the San Rio store.
Cream Puff.
No.
The cream puffs at Beard Papa. Oh. They're so nice.
So good. I think basically if you have a store at Hollywood and Highland, like when you sign the lease, you agree to the fact that on the last weekend in February or whenever the Academy Awards are, like, you're just shutting down.
Interesting.
And that's all
there is to it. So the Christmas, the year-round Christmas tree store and ornament shop is What are they going to do with all that business loss?
I can't begin to imagine. What about the Hard Rock Cafe? It seems like they would be the ones taking the hardest hit.
Yeah.
But, you know. But
California Pizza Kitchen.
True. But, like, that whole block is kind of shut off anyway, so it's not like people are milling about, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
So, you're right. Anyway, L.A. minutia, fascinating
Hooray
to everyone
for
right now.
Hallywood.
So,
talking about Snitch.
Yeah, because it's Oscar weekend, not a whole lot of new movies, which I don't get the logic of. I don't think that there's a big chunk of America that wouldn't go see a big
movie. On any given weekend, you only have to open like two big films.
Right.
Honestly. And that's the bare minimum, and that's what they do.
I guess, but the ones that open this weekend seem kind of half promoted and sort of, you know, kind of.
No one cares.
But that's what I don't
get. They don't care.
I think that this weekend there are enough people who don't care about the Oscars at all, or who at least don't feel like, oh God, I've got to catch, you know, Life of Pi and Les Mis before the show starts, right, that would go see, yeah, if you opened, you know, like if you opened Warm Bodies this weekend, you know, if you opened Identity Thief this weekend, I don't think it's going to take a hit because, oh, everybody's, you know, everybody's got Oscar fever, you know.
I got it.
Anyway, so that's what happened.
I got Oscar fever.
They didn't open much this weekend, but they did open Snitch, which I did not see, but Dave did.
Snitch is a movie with The Rock.
Dwayne Johnson.
Thank you very much. I don't know. Is he called Dwayne Johnson?
Isn't he now? I thought like he was always.
No.
I thought he went from.
Okay, he's being billed as Dwayne Johnson over the title.
Right.
But it's not a Dwayne Johnson movie at all.
None of them are Dwayne Johnson. It's a The Rock. They're all Rock movies, but he still goes by Dwayne
Johnson. No. Some of them are not. No. Like the Fairy Tooth Fairy movie, or the kid, I'm a football player and here's my child and I have to take care of her and learn,
yeah,
to be
a
parent.
Yeah, but the whole appeal of those
whatever
movies,
that was called.
The whole movie appeal of those movies is it's The Rock being feminized.
And then
so he's still The Rock.
Get Shorty.
Be Cool.
Be Cool, whatever.
He went from being The Rock to Dwayne The Rock Johnson to Dwayne Johnson.
He's The Rock.
But he's The Rock. Let's face it.
He's very much The Rock in this movie, which is about The Rock. And The Rock has a kid who's 18, Rafi Gavron, who's been in lots of indie stuff.
Rock Jr.?
He's British, actually, this kid. But he's doing a, you know.
As always.
As they all do. They do this. These
killer
great,
American.
Yeah, unless they're Ewan McGregor or Sam Worthington, you know.
Oh, well, he's Australian.
He's Australian. But the he's got a kid, and the kid accepts a giant bag of ecstasy.
Like, could you carry it onto a plane?
He's Skyping with his dumb friend, who's like, "Can I have the big box of ecstasy delivered to your house?" And the kid's like, "All right,
sure.
No, maybe I shouldn't. You can have some if you let it be delivered." Oh, okay. He gets the box. And he opens the box.
Does it have, like, ecstasy stamped on the outside?
In fact, there's a big smiley faces all around the perimeter of the box.
Contents. Ecstasy. God,
yeah.
This side up.
Who's it from? Happy Mondays. Special delivery from Happy Mondays.
From Madchester.
And so he opens a box, and there's a little camera that's been placed in it.
Oh, psych.
It's been intercepted by the feds.
Mm.
And when they intercepted it, they were like, "Who are you sending this to?" And his best friend ratted him out and said, "I'm sending it to my friend who's going to help me sell it."
Oh.
Which is a super lie. Like, wait, thanks, best friend.
Yeah.
So, so then, you know, the kid gets arrested, and now they have these mandatory minimum sentences,
right,
for drug people.
Mm.
Funny, they don't have them for people who rape children, but they've got them for drug people.
Or who gamble their bank's money on the market.
Yeah,
on
none of those people, swaps. None of those people deserve minimum mandatory minimums.
No.
But somebody with some ecstasy or some weed,
put them away.
Yeah, they should die in prison.
Because, you know, now that the prison system is for profit, we got to, like, arrest as many jerks as possible.
So they put him in, and The Rock is like, "Hey, Susan Sarandon, who is the
Fed.
She's running for office, and she's like a federal prosecutor who's running for office. And
she's tough on crime.
She's tough on crime, yeah. He's like, "What can I do to get my son's sentence reduced. And she's like, nothing. And he's like, no, I'm going to become an undercover officer.
Serpico?
Not Serpico. What's the word? I'm looking for this very easy English word. Like an amateur undercover guy. He's going to go do it on his own. Mm. Rogue. He's rogue. Going rogue. And so then Susan Sarandon's like, okay, if you're really, you know, gung-ho about doing this and catching criminals, catching drug people, I'll reduce his sentence. Here's Barry Pepper of the DEA to help you. Barry Pepper with this long, 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 long goatee that at a few points in the film, he ties off into a goatee ponytail.
Ooh.
It's pretty terrific. And they go off and they meet up with...
Does he sing Tube Steak Boogie?
Lower level drug people. And they catch the lower level drug people, but then Barry Pepper's like, no, we're going to let them go because we're going up to the top. We're going to the cartel.
The big fish.
And the Rock is going in deep, too deep.
Yeah.
So they meet the head of the cartel, El Topo, played by Benjamin Bratt.
Oh, goody.
Who's doing the best, like, my people kind of accent. You know, like, he's having the Scarfaciest time of his career.
El Topo Gigio.
Yeah. And... so, you know, the Rock has to, he got to regulate. He goes and buys a gun, a scene which drew applause from the audience.
Buying a gun?
Buying the gun. People applauded him buying the gun. And then he learned to drive an 18-wheeler, and then he learned to shoot a shotgun. He learns to shoot it with one hand, like you do.
While driving an 18-wheeler.
While driving an 18-wheeler, all fast, into oncoming traffic. You know how it is.
Yeah, of course.
And so...
Does he practice going into oncoming traffic?
No, or really going into no. Stuff explodes and he kills everybody. Like, he's such an amazing shot.
Uh-huh.
He's moving. He's driving and shooting. And then, you know, he gets, you know, help from one of his employees who's an ex-con. It's a movie that stars The Rock. And I had a good time.
Now,
this is not a good movie, but it is a good movie in that it does exactly
you were entertained nonetheless.
What you wanted to do, it does Rock things mm-hmm. with The Rock.
Mm-hmm. It's very Rocky,
and then it's done, and when it's done, everything's good again because of The Rock.
Uh-huh.
The end.
Now, here's what Matt Atchity was saying on What the Flick, that the problem with the movie is that. Because The Rock is playing The Rock, you never feel like he's in danger.
Well, he's not. He's The Rock.
Because he's so physically intimidating to everyone around.
This movie is not meant to put you in any feeling of danger.
Like I'd suggested that maybe Philip Seymour Hoffman should have played the role, and it would have maybe added some suspense as to whether or not he was going to get
this movie is like, you know when you're a little kid at the Howard Johnson's, and you turn the paper placemat over, and there's a maze that you can use a crayon to go through the maze?
Yeah.
And there's no way for you to turn left or right. You just have to follow the lines. Like, there's no way for you to get lost in this maze. You just have to follow the lines, and then you end up the other end, and you're four. And someone says, hooray, you made it through the maze. And you don't even think that you think that you did something great, but you didn't do anything. That's this movie.
Okay.
It is
Snitch, based on the back of the Howard Johnson's placement.
Yes. And because it's that, and because that's what I was expecting,
yeah.
And because my expectations were fully met, I completely had a good time. It also has the worst score of any movie
really?
I've seen in a long time. Every single moment in the movie sounds musically like every single other moment in the movie.
Is it all dun-dun-dun-dun-dun?
Kind of, yeah, in that way, yeah.
I've been getting a lot of dun 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 dun, dun lately.
This is, yeah.
Okay.
It stars The Rock.
The other big opener this week was Dark Skies, which the Weinstein Company did not see fit to screen for critics. And 999 times out of 1,000, that means the movie is a total stink burger. This one.
Or at least a smell burger.
Yes. Yeah. This one, not a total stink burger.
It is not.
I don't want to oversell it, but it's not a total stinker.
When we got home from the movie, you were overselling it.
Well, because,
to me.
Because
you're like, that was blah, that was blah. You were throwing around adjectives that were just wrong. And no, I'm not even going to repeat them because they were so wrong.
I'm just saying because my expectations had been lowered severely by the fact that they were dumping this movie without a press screening. So naturally, you know, the fact that the seats were pointed at the screen and the movie was in focus was already like, you know, leaps and bounds above what I was expecting. And I have to say, I was, and I have a lower threshold of this than you, I was frightened during several points of the film. I found it.
You're hilarious. It blows me away what rattles you. When in the rare moments when I do get to see a horror film with you, mm-hmm. because most of the time you fob them off on the other critic for the rap, whose name I can't remember.
Leah, not always.
Oh, you do. Any chance you get, you give them away because you just don't want
to. Actually, that's not true because she goes tends to leave town for the weekend, so she can't see the stuff that doesn't get shown to the press, and I always have to see those on a Thursday night or a Friday morning. So more often than not, I probably review horror films than she does. I just don't particularly. That's not my favorite genre, but.
Well, you. When I do sit next to you in a horror movie, it always cracks me up how, like, you get. You're very.
I do not make that sound.
You're goosey in a horror movie.
Anyway.
Yeah.
This movie goosed me. it stars Kerry Russell and Josh.
For the record, this movie is not scary at all.
Oh, wow.
At all.
You know, I think it has some good jolts in it. Kerry Russell and Josh Hamilton play a suburban couple who are having financial problems. He's an architect who's out of work and trying to find another job. She is trying to make up for the lack of income by working as a real estate agent, but she tends to actually tell, you know, prospective buyers that they could do better than the house she's showing them. So, you know, she's not exactly bringing it in hand over fist either. So they're behind on their mortgage and, you know, the having arguments and the kids sense tension. And then in the middle of all this, things start happening in the middle of the night. Somebody comes into their kitchen and takes a bunch of food out of the fridge. Or they make this weird sculpture that reflects these light patterns on the ceiling. Or they, then the family installs a burglar alarm, even though they can't really afford it. And then suddenly the burglar alarm gets set off by having things come through all 8 points of ingress at the same time. And just all these strange things are happening. And finally, they realize that apparently, according to Mark Olson, who lucked into going to see a screening of this, the one they had on Wednesday night that we weren't invited to, there was a certain word that the publicist asked him not to use in his review, so I will not say it.
That word?
Yeah.
The one that I almost used in mine, and then you...
I thought it was a spoiler, so I didn't. And
apparently it is apparently considered a spoiler.
Apparently it's considered a spoiler, so... Anyway,
I don't think it is, but for the purposes of this podcast, I will not say that.
I will say if they intended it to be a spoiler, then they should have come up with a different title. I'll leave it at that. So, you know, then they have to kind of figure out it raises the interesting idea, which I've never seen expressed in a movie like this that's about a haunted house or about, you know, paranormal, whatever. The notion of people figuring out what it is and then realizing, oh, we can't ask anyone for help or we'll sound insane.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I thought was kind of, you know, I thought that was a neat twist.
Yeah.
I found myself really into this movie. I thought it had some twists that I didn't see coming. Really well acted by the two leads and the two kid actors. And J.K. Simmons pops up for an interesting cameo as an expert in the phenomenon.
The paranormal.
The phenomenon at hand.
Yeah.
Not great, but perfectly solidly okay.
Yeah. I will say it is perfectly solidly on the good side of okay.
Yeah.
Like I was as pleased with this as I was with Snitch.
Okay.
Not scared, but enough cool anxiety and tension going on to keep me interested.
Yeah.
And again, you know, anybody out there writing a thesis about, can you pause it for just a moment, please?
Sure. Anyone writing a thesis?
About
economic anxiety?
Economic anxiety.
In the films of the early 21st century?
Yeah, in the horror films. All the horror movies now are about the thing that happens in your house.
Right.
The house that is, like, not your safety place anymore.
Right.
You know, it's going to kill you. Your house is going to kill you because the bank is taking it away. Right. Or, you know, something horrible is happening to you. You've lost your job. You're getting kicked out of your house. The funny thing about horror films, though, is that when the house becomes evil, everyone just hunkers down and stays.
You know, because they can't afford a motel at this point.
Right.
You know, but the only reason I didn't say specifically horror films is because, like, you know, we've talked about, you know, Magic Mike and Side Effects and stuff being also about economic anxiety.
Well, yes, and particularly Magic Mike.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's fine. You know, every time I see Carrie Russell, like halfway through the movie, I was like, just record a letter to Sally.
You'll
feel so much better. And Sally will send you back a tape and you can listen to it and she'll have advice for you. That didn't happen.
When it broke into their kitchen, I wondered if
really? You just said the word.
I'm going to take that out.
Someone's spoilering everything.
Anyway, when the event
we're back.
When the event takes place.
Edit that we just had to do.
When the event takes place in the kitchen.
Tried to ruin the film.
I wondered if the I can't believe it's not butter had been stolen. That's a little Felicity joke for the anyway. Is anybody watching The Americans? Do we know if it's any good or not?
I've heard both good and bad.
Okay.
I don't remember now who told me it was good or bad, but I've heard both good and bad.
I think I have too. I haven't had time to.
Do anything except Felicity. Though.
I have a whole stack of House of Cards sitting in
always Felicity forever.
Me. And oh my God, if one more person asks me if I'm watching Enlightened,
well, we're gonna start. Watching
Margie was the 20th person yesterday, and I said, "Do you have season one on DVD?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Great, loan it to us."
Yeah, loan it
she
to
said,
us.
She said, "Good. Maybe Dave will get the flu, and y'all can sit and just watch the whole thing."
She wants me to get sick.
Apparently so.
All right.
Yeah, let's take that up with her. But anyway, so we are gonna get Enlightened.
The flu already. Because
all I keep hearing lately, Enlightened. If you're watching Girls, you really need to be watching Enlightened. Enlightened's so awesome. It's the best show nobody's watching. Oh my God, are you watching Enlightened? Enlightened is so amazing. And I'm sure I'll love it. I'm a big Mike White fan. But yeah. That's what we started TiVoing it, and then TiVo ate them, and it was
that's what always happens.
Yeah, so, whatever. We're going to watch Enlightened, I promise.
All right, so the new Abbas Kiarostami movie is here.
Yay! I've been reading about it in Teen Beat for months.
You shut up.
No, I'm kidding.
It's called Like Someone in Love.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who Abbas Kiarostami is, he's an acclaimed Iranian filmmaker. He does not live in Iran.
No.
Because if he did, like Jafar Panahi, he too would probably be, by this point, under house arrest. Although, I will say, his movies have always skirted around
about what they're about.
The stuff, yeah. And Jafar Panahi's films have not, like, you know. If you want to watch a movie by Jafar Panahi, go watch The Circle about these women who live in constant terror of everything in Tehran. And Kiarostami's films are much more
metaphorical.
They're quiet and it's very sort of oblique. This one is in line with his latest film, Certified Copy.
Which I was not a big fan
of. You were not a big fan of. But it reminded me a little bit of Certified Copy in that it's about identity. Like, it's the story of a young college student girl in Tokyo. And she has a jealous boyfriend, an angry jealous boyfriend, who's always bugging her. Mm-hmm. And she's a student. She's trying to go to school. She's also working part-time as a prostitute to get money.
As you do.
Sometimes you do.
Yeah.
And she gets set up with a client who's a very old professor. She goes to his house, and he doesn't want to bone her at all. He wants to give her soup. But she's like, I don't like soup. I'm sleepy. So she falls asleep in his bed, sleeps there. So he sort of just wants to take care of her. Mm-hmm. And the very next day, when she has to sort of deal with the boyfriend, he poses, the old man poses as her grandfather. And she goes along with this, and he goes along with it. And it becomes this sort of much more complicated deception.
It does sound like certified copy.
In a way, yes. Because you're never quite sure, from start to finish, who these people are to each other. Like,
when are they telling the truth, and when are they
Is it possible that he is, in fact, her grandfather?
Yeah. Or have they just started believing their own line of BS? Yeah. Or,
and yeah. It's an interesting movie formally also because Kiarostami, I'm trying to say this the right way, he frames everybody through other objects, through windows, through doors, down halls, reflections in mirrors and televisions, often, very often, through glass because a lot of the action takes place in the old man's car. Mm-hmm. So people are talking to each other through the car window or into the back seat, through the rearview mirror. And it reminded me a lot of a movie called Ten, which Kiarostami made in 2002, which was set entirely in a car.
Huh. Like Cosmopolis?
Not like that very much at all. In this really, really sort of, I'm going to use a film comment word now.
Ooh.
Rigorous way. He's never not paying attention to how you are seeing these people and how they are presenting themselves to you and to one another. And so it's really about that sort of distance and separation and the isolation of that and how loneliness and how fear, you know, bring people together and drive them apart. It's really, really terrific.
Okay.
Like it's beautifully made. It's never predictable. You don't know where it's going. The final scene will make you go, what? Like you're not expecting what happens. And then when it happens, you have no idea why. will live with the ambiguity of everything about this film. Go forth and watch it. It opened in New York and LA last week. It expanded to more cities this week. Mm-hmm. If you live in a small town, obviously it's never going to come to where you live, but it'll eventually be on DVD.
If I found the sort of mind games of certified copy irritating,
You will like this one.
Really?
Yes, because I think the reason you found the certified copy mind games annoying is because Juliette Binoche was really, really acting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, she was going for it in a very overt, emotionally sort of open kind of way, mm-hmm. which is a lot to deal with.
Whereas the Japanese tend to be more reserved.
This is like a Japanese film, really.
Huh.
Okay. It's not. It has less in common with Jafar Panahi's kind of filmmaking, even than Certified Copy did, and it has more in common with that sort of like quiet Japanese art house sort of. You know, the line from Ozu to this is much more tangible than the line from
Taste of Cherry.
Yes.
Yeah. I see. So. Okay, interesting. Then the movie I saw this week that you did not, that's also opening in limited release, is Inescapable.
I just said Ozu.
Yes.
And Rigorous. So I'm done.
We're all so impressed with
I'm
you.
Done. I've done all the real heavy podcasting that I need to do today. Talk about your little whatever it is you saw.
You just go do your little water ballet or whatever it is you do.
Yeah, whatever it is you're going to do now.
It's a film called Inescapable, also opening in limited release. It is directed and written by a woman named Ruba Nada, who did a film a year or two ago called Cairo Time with Patricia Clarkson as a I believe, an American woman who travels to Egypt and falls in love with a native gentleman. This one is about a Syrian who had been, like, in military intelligence, was a spy, basically, and under mysterious circumstances had left the country decades ago and was living in Toronto and is very successful. His oldest daughter is a photojournalist, and she, while traveling around Europe, decides she wants to go to Damascus and find out more about her father's mysterious past that he never talks about, and she disappears. So he is forced to go back and to find her. The main guy is played by Alexander Siddig, who was on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and I think was also the lead in Cairo Time and some other stuff. The only reason to see this movie is for...
None.
No, for Marissa Tomei.
I'm kidding.
Who plays...
I love Marissa Tomei. Yeah,
I know you do.
In the same way that I love Gamera.
Yes. They're underappreciated, but they try harder. So Gamera Tomei plays Fatima, the woman who this guy, the lead guy, was supposed to marry back in the day, and then suddenly he disappeared. And apparently, for her safety, never contacted her in the ensuing two decades.
Weird.
So, like, she didn't know if he was alive or dead. She didn't know anything. And so suddenly, out of the blue, here he comes. Hey, I need to try and find my daughter. Can you help me out? And so the movie tries to sort of be partially about this guy and his tortured past and reconnecting with the people and blah, blah, blah. And then partially this sort of like half-baked, taken, like, you know, shoot him up, chasey, get the daughter back stuff. My original headline on therap.com, which they did not use, was "Not Without My Taken Daughter."
A little labored.
Maybe. That's
probably why they got rid of it.
You know what?
If I were your editor, I would have dumped that right away. So they were smart.
You're not nearly as witty as you think you are. I hate to break that to you, rigorous. Don't come telling me.
Oh, really?
About my jokes being labored.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. We're gonna have a wittiness off.
Uh huh.
Keep talking.
Uh huh.
Keep doing your thing.
Anyway, so this movie kind of eh. Joshua Jackson turns up as the
Pacey
as the Canadian ambassador. So, you know, that means one friend of ours will definitely go see it.
Why?
Because Joshua Jackson's in it.
Who do we know that loves Joshua Jackson?
Our friend who couldn't wait for The Skulls to come out.
I'm blanking on who this is.
I'll tell you later.
All right.
Anyway, yeah, very kind of...
Male or female?
Male.
So someone we know is gay for Joshua Jackson.
Yes.
All right.
Anyway, so this movie kind of, you know, just... I was very underwhelmed. And again, it had... The score had two speeds. Dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun for the action stuff. And then sort of generically... for the romantic stuff. Very underwhelming, not anything that is ever going to be talked about in the future, but it opened this week, so we're talking about it now. Yay, Marissa Tomei. That's it. That's all I got.
Okay, that sounds like a boring movie.
We got no emails this week.
No emails, so we're going straight to...
Thanks for nothing.
DVDs.
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We still want top 10 lists. We want commentary, questions, whatever you got, throw it our way. But please, we like hearing from you, and it helps fill the show.
Tell us who's wittier.
Linoleum Podcast.
This is the new contest.
There was never an old contest.
The new contest is.
These exist in your head.
The new contest is who's wittier, because you just threw it down.
Fine. You think I'm scared?
Maybe you ought to be.
Troglodyte?
Maybe you ought to should be.
I'm the Noel Coward here. You're the...
Fred Flintstone.
Yeah. Fred Flintstone is wittier than you are.
Ouch. Fine.
You're fine. You're Fred Flintstone. I'm the Great Gazoo.
The Great Gazoo gets punched in the face. It's going to be some domestic violence up in here.
We did, however, get a new review on iTunes, And in fact, that review cited International Butter Club, so which means you actually listened to the whole show. So bravo. Thank you for that. If you want to leave us one on iTunes, that would be great. That does help people find the show. DVD pick, what do you got?
The Master.
Okay.
Comes out this week.
Okay.
Underappreciated film. Not a box office success.
Nope.
Not an Academy Award nominated success, other than the three acting awards. Two acting nominations.
They didn't nominate Phoenix.
Yeah, they did.
Did they?
Didn't they?
Did they?
I think they did.
I can't remember.
I think they did.
I thought they didn't.
I'm pretty sure they did.
Okay.
Anyway, I get a lot of naysaying about this movie from you. And from Kurt, who on Facebook said, a lot of smart people didn't really like The Master.
And a lot of smart people did.
You're wrong. Ugh. If you didn't like this movie, you're wrong.
It's
great. It's one of the best films of the year.
I think it has great stuff in it and is also flawed. There.
You'll notice that I didn't retort with "you're flawed" like you have been retorting to me about my wits.
You are correct. They did nominate Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
So look who's following the Oscars.
He won't win.
No.
Even though he should. But yeah, watch The Master. It's fantastic.
Although I have to say, it is, you know, both yours and my DVD pick this week are movies that you really should have seen on the big screen if you had the chance.
Either way.
I mean, because you have to admit, The Master was shot in 70mm. And
it looks,
you know,
beautiful.
Looks gorgeous on the big screen.
Really, really beautiful.
I mean, there's a lot that I liked about the movie. I thought great score, which wasn't nominated for an Oscar. But incredible cinematography and really great use of the 70mm, the whole, you know, grain definition, blah, 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 whatever people, I don't know the terminology here, but it looked real pretty.
But it was tonally just perfect and strange, and it leaves you sort of unresolved about what's happening, and it's about a thing that is so very rarely, you know, talked about in life, much less in films. You know, the idea of this very American kind of phenomenon where, you know, the search for spiritual life becomes tied up in, you know, cults of personality and business interests and people wanting to make money off of you and control and power and all this stuff. And it's technically based in Scientology, but it could be an evangelical megachurch.
Sure.
It could be set there. It could be set there.
It could be Amy Semple McPherson.
It could be in a church. It could be about Joel Osteen, honestly.
And or so who's that's, the Rick Warren? You know, one of those.
Yeah, either one of the two gross people that are now hooked up with Oprah, of all people. And so
thanks, Opes.
Yeah, and so it could be about any of this stuff, and it's just mesmerizing. So there.
Look, I'm not saying it's not a good movie, and that people shouldn't see it. I just didn't love it as much as you did. I think it has flaws. But it's absolutely worth seeing. My pick is my favorite narrative film of 2012, which is now out on DVD, which is Holy Motors. Which again would have been
also beautiful.
Would have been awesome to see if you'd seen it on the big screen. If you could, you know, see it on as large a home theater as possible, that would help, I suppose. But it is Leo Carax's just stunning kind of Valentine dream of the movies. Anchored by an extraordinary performance by Denis Levant, who was runner-up for LA Film Critics Best Actor this year. I would have loved it if he'd won, because he is just amazing, and both physically and emotionally rigorous.
Stops copies me.
It's a really great movie, and it's quite possible that it did not play near you, and so if you didn't get a chance to see it before, see it now. And speaking of my favorite films of last year, I know I've mentioned on this show many times, but How to Survive a Plague, which is up for best documentary tonight, and I would love it if it won, but we'll see how that goes. Also comes out on DVD this Tuesday, so you can see it at home. There are deleted scenes. There's a commentary track. So even if you've already seen the movie, there's added stuff that makes it worth picking up.
All right, we're done. Goodbye.
Don't rush.
I gotta make breakfast.
Okay, well, you know what? I gotta do the plugs first, so just relax.
Do it.
As always, we thank you for listening, and we ask you to check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, and, you know, it's funny, Throwing Shade lists their own sort of co-network shows at the end, and I generally ignore them, but lately I decided to take a few in, and I really enjoyed My Brother and Me, and Stop Podcasting Yourself. Those are both pretty funny, so I will have to try out more in their little network of whatever they are. Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. As I mentioned earlier, you can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review there, that would be great. The more positive reviews we get, the more people are liable to find the show, which would be awesome. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or at thelounge.com. We ask you to like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. And then individually, I am at A. Duraldi, as I said before, and I'll be live tweeting the Oscars tonight. Dave is at D. Leland White. You can check into the show at Get Glue, and please drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. And, you know, we haven't gotten to rate anybody 100% knife lately, so we need some top 10 lists from you folks.
And it better be a good one if you want 100%.
That's right. Anyway.
You better have the master on it.
Shut up. It's great to have you join us, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.